You are listening to a sermon series from Open Door Fellowship Church.
Hey, good morning, everyone. This is a big crowd here today. This is, they bus you in? This is great. This is beautiful. Just wanted to tell you about this last week. It was, man, your prayers for that prayer breakfast were answered so profoundly it knocked me down. I got to speak at the banquet the night before for the Midwestern contingent, and just sweet senators and congressmen and hoi polloi, the just important people that I generally am not allowed to be around usually. And it was profound. It was just profound. I got to share the message that night, two roads talk in front of them, and talked about Santa. It was just wonderful. And afterwards, Bart calls from Mercy Me, or he texts me and says, get up here now, Bob Goff is here. So we got to hang out with Bob Goff. I had a new suit on. It doesn't get any better. You'll never see that suit, of course. I'll never wear it again. And then the next day, so you've got the president and vice president, you've got the King of Jordan, you've got prime ministers, you've got congressmen and senators and princes and princesses, and Bart and Mercy Me are asked to sing two songs. He does, I can only imagine, and then at the end, he sang Flawless, and to hear that, it just stunned me. Flawless came from his writing of an album after he had read The Cure. And I just got back to my room, and I was blown away that these lyrics of holiness, of grace, of actual righteousness, that really got formed from that old man's reading of the scriptures, from Bill understanding that and passing it on to us, and a book getting formed out of this community, largely. And then you should have seen Vice President Pence. He's just sobbing. It was profound. All of them listening to these words from before the world began, prepared for these leaders to hear. It was stunning. It just made me so proud to be part of this funky little community that gets to be used all over the world. Unbelievable. Amen. Amen. Hey, let's do this. Let's read again from Ephesians 1, this beautiful passage that we've been going through and hopefully memorizing. John, will you go ahead and bring that up? Thanks. Guys, let's stand again. Look at me. Stuart has taught me how to do this. Yeah. I ask the God of our Master, Jesus Christ, the God of glory, to make you intelligent and discerning in Him. Personally, your eyes focused and clear so that you can see exactly what He is calling you to do. Grasp the immensity of this glorious way of life He has for Christians. Oh, the utter extravagance of His work in us who trust Him. Endless energy, boundless strength. All this energy issues from Christ. God raised Him from the dead and set Him on a throne in deep heaven, in charge of running the universe. Everything from galaxies to governments, no name and no power exempt from His rule, and not just for the time being, but forever. He is in charge of all of it. He has the final word on everything. At the center of all this, Christ rules the church. The church, you see, is not peripheral to the world. Ow! The world is peripheral to the church. The church is Christ's body. in which he speaks and acts, by which he fills everything with his presence. Amen. 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 Gosh. Well, this, as you know, is the So What series. And after we have gone through Romans and with this as our backdrop of all this theology, then the next question is, so what? How does this affect my life? How does this affect in specific ways, in specific areas? So one of the things that you brought up was this question, how do you earn trust? We talk about trust. How you say that I will only influence if I am trusted. You say that I'll only get to teach from the heart if I'm trusted. Well, enough generalities. Tell me what that looks like. So that was one of the questions. That's what I'm going to do today. I asked for this chair and lamp and stuff because last time I just felt so cool in the living room. And it made me feel so conversational. And there are certain series where you can't, where it's a didactic series and you're teaching in Ephesians or Galatians, and you probably need to be behind a podium. But I'm just trying to have like a cheat sheet here and try to talk just through the slides that are here. So it's a real delight, this series. I've never done anything like it, and it's an absolute delight to me. So this last week, thinking about that statement, earning trust so you can love, it's just like everything was a teaching moment to me. So I'm preaching at Journey Church last weekend, which is incredible. Ed Noble says, Journey Church, it's this beautiful mega church in San Diego. And he says, our entire epistemology, who we are, comes out of God's word, and more recently, saturated by The Cure. So they have us out there a couple times a year. Beautiful church. But this guy met me in the bathroom. I don't like talking to people in the bathroom. Let's go in there, let's do what we need to do, and let's move on. Don't talk to me. And this guy says, I'm sorry, have you got a minute? No, I don't. Leave me alone. He says, I don't want to read the book. I don't want to read it because it's going to... I have my kids. I mean, I love them so much, but they can try. And I have to... But they drive me nuts. And I find myself barking at them and saying things that I don't want to say at all, but I do it. And it makes me... It's I can see that they're upset. They know that I'm a better man than... And I know that I am, but I can't. So I don't want to read your book. And I'm thinking, well, I don't want to talk to you anymore. Then I'm in Fry's waiting for a prescription this week, and this mom is just with her child, and the child is just being a kid, and she's going, please, stop, stop, don't do that. Hey, what did I tell you? I said, don't do that. Hey, come on, what does it take? What is it going to take? Stop, just stop. I just want to say, hey, wait, this isn't working for you too. Can I help? And that never goes well, so I didn't. But I thought about this line that we write very early on in The Cure and Parents. This is the cruel joke that somehow slipped in under the door. It goes like this. These children we waited and longed for have now become our opponents. Opponents we love, but ones we now have to manage. Which brings me to the famous quote that I'm going to show you now. Nothing can cause us to fail as consistently, comically, or pitifully than parenting. And this next statement is true. You will be given very little permission to influence another's heart if your person is not trusted. You may offer information, even knowledge, but it will break your heart to discover your inability to impart heart truth, discernment, insight, and wisdom if you've not earned trust. So this trust deal is such a big, big thing. So I look at this wall and I go, what do I want to pull off this week? And it's right here. the God of glory, to make you intelligent regarding your kids. And by the way, extrapolate out from this. This is not just parents and kids. It's what I'm going to use for the example, for the application. But this is true husbands and wives. This is true bosses and employees. This is true of dear friends. But I'll be using this example. But this carries across everything. That the God of glory would make you intelligent and discerning in knowing him personally, your eyes focused and clear so that you can see exactly what it is he's calling you to do. How does this tie into God and how does it tie back to us? We write this statement, because God's primary goal is earning my trust so he can love me and increasingly mature me, correct my behavior, and free my life, well, then I'm going to offer the same for my child. Here's the kicker. God has done endlessly more than enough to have earned my trust. But he knows that until I actually practically trust him, very little that he desires for me will come to pass. My lack of trust comes from my fear of trust, not his worthiness to be trusted. So because he loves me so deeply, he continually reveals himself as trustworthy, breaking down my fears and walls of self-preservation. As I grow to trust the perfectly trustworthy one, I heal, I mature, I become free. It's why David calls out, "Oh, taste and see. Taste and see that the Lord is so good." He was saying, when you're able to see him accurately and trust his intentions for you, oh, what a marvelous life you'll have with him. But this scares us. It seems so hard because it is integrity that earns trust that allows me to influence the heart. Integrity's the catch for me. Because I mess up and fail, and it doesn't feel like I'll ever have enough integrity to be trusted enough to get to influence. And I love my kids and grandkids and friends and family and wife so much, and I feel like I have so much that I could influence, but will I ever get permission? So I want to kind of intervene into that line of thinking. Put up that next thought. Integrity is not to be without failure. Integrity is more often about what I do when I have failed you. That's a beautiful help for me. So Psalm 34:8. And look at that verse again. John, if you'll pull that up, thanks. Taste and see that the Lord is good. What a vulnerable statement. What a vulnerable statement of God. He's saying, why it's vulnerable, not that God ever makes a mistake or blows it, but it, at first blush, not everything he does looks good. Not something that I would say, oh yes, that broken leg. Thank you. I taste and see the Lord is good. Yes, I could have walked 6 inches to my left and not broken it, but no. yes, the Lord, it doesn't immediately show up all the time that he's good, but the beautiful vulnerability of God to say, just stay. I want you to see. I want you to see through seasons. Because if I look back on my relationship with God, isn't it crazy? The further I get away, the more perfect it looks like he has run my life. I can't think of anything that I would have had him done different. Money, perhaps. Yeah. No, nothing that I think I would have said, no, because I could see what he's done and I could see how he's moving it. So taste and see that the Lord is good. What he's saying is, if you, I'm going to take the hit for a long time, he's saying, for you to not see me as perfectly good. But when you do see me as good, something magical is going to happen. You're going to let me protect you. Blessed is the man who takes refuge in him. In the couplet like that, it always is tied to the first half. If you see him as good, you will take refuge in him. What a beautiful statement he's saying. And now how does that play out in parenting? In the same way, now I have issues, I've got stuff, but what a humble, vulnerable thing it is for a parent to say to their child, I want you to know me. I want you to see what's true about me, because ultimately, I want to be such a good parent to you. I want to love you so well. And if you ever get to see me accurately and taste and see who I really am, you'll see that I'm good. Messed up, but good. And you will come under my protection. I will be a refuge for you. So that's everything I'm trying to do as a parent. So there's certain things that engender trust, and there's certain things that don't. And so I want to spend much of the rest of the time talking about, if this is my goal, I want them to see John Lynch, I want them to see you as you really are, then here's some of the things that I think that I am learning in gender trust. The first I just put because it has to be first is my maturity. We make the statement, when your children are young, being the parent carries enough control to handle them. But if you don't grow up as they grow older, your immaturity will stunt their maturity at the level of your own. And no measure of control can handle that. My immaturity is not that big a deal until I get married. And it's really, really a big deal when I have kids. And I have immaturity. And it will harm whoever comes after me if I don't deal with it. And I love my kids and my grandkids, and I love the people who are around me so much. And I see how things from my past, I see how family of origin, I see how unresolved issues, I see how my own pain that I didn't resolve well keeps me immature. And my kids will be stuck. Unless they get some other intervention, some other outside sources who could speak into them, they won't get to mature past my maturity. So I go, golly, God, whatever that takes. Now, if that's another brother, if that's a mature big sister, if that's counseling, if it's whatever that is in your word, God, draw me to you so that I grow up and start to face those issues. When my kids see me doing that, they trust me. So that one I just put on its own. There's going to be a couple that'll be two or three long. The next that engenders trust, no shaming, ever. There is never an appropriate time to ever shame your child. No matter what they do, no matter what they said, no matter what trouble they got into. You know what shame is. Shame says there is something uniquely wrong about you. You are defective. You are messed up, and you will never get better no matter what you try to do. And so any shaming statements that play into that, of all the things we can do, that may be the one that they will forget slowest. It will stay with them. I used another term here, and I don't know if it works for you, but it's the only way I can say it, powering down. If I'm going to gain trust with my kids and my grandkids and my friends and my family and my wife, I am loud, I'm articulate, I speak fast, and I can use my largeness and my size and my loudness to intimidate, to win over my children, and that will cause them to not trust me. So I have to not use my size. I hear people who just say, yeah, my grandpapa, he used to have a knife he'd carry, and he'd whittle when the grandkids were around, and there was no discipline problem there. And I go, no, that's just sick and illegal, you know. That's just really... So all those things of me winning because I have the ability to be louder, your kids will not trust you from that. This next one, objectivity. You'll hear me talk about this one again in this message. This is the one that I struggle most with. I'm doing a message on it about family of origin. My dad struggled so much with this one, and his dad before that, probably, and his mom. But I don't know how that works, but you can do the math. But objectivity. When I get hurt, inflamed, I go nuts, and I can hurt people by my language. The next step. And so people learn to not trust me because I can't, and I didn't even know I was doing it for a while, like a blind lemming. I was just losing my objectivity, and I thought I was right. It needs to be said. It was unhealthy. And eventually, people around you, they love you, but they learn to go, you know what? Let's not tell Pops that because, well, you know how he's going to respond. And if I had you raise your hands, it's largely men who that statement's true about. That's not fair, but boy, that's a hard one. For me to break that code, and I'll talk about that later in the message, that one right there is so big in allowing your children to trust you. Give me the next section of them. Bill has taught so much on this of rules moving to guidelines. Rules are a powerful, beautiful gift of God to protect my child early on. And then somewhere, they would say about age 9, that intersection to where rules would meet guidelines would happen. And after that, less rules, more guidelines, less, no, almost no rules. And early on, no value in guidelines, no value, rules, and now a little bit of, so it meets right about 9. And so so early on, age 2, it's just no. No. I don't, a thesis is not going to help, you know. But about age 5, age 6, no, but here's, I want to kind of fill in some of this. Here's why we would do it this way. Maybe around age 11, we see a movie in a movie theater, and the preview on it says some nudity and apocalyptic poisons used. And so I say, do you see why maybe that probably wouldn't be a movie that we'd want to go to tonight? Maybe about age 15, talk to me. What do you think about this movie? You tell me. Are we going? Oh, you don't want me to go with you. Okay, no, that's fine. That's fine. That's fine. Yeah. But now you're starting to make the decision, and I'm starting to stand with you and say, yeah, I like what you just said. That's great. So rules move to guidelines, and eventually... good parenting allows there to be almost no rules into their late teens because guidelines have now freed them to make decisions on their own and not have to be dependent upon yours. And oh, do they trust you for it? Oh, do they love you in being willing to do that? Another one I say is to give the big picture, to get out of the fight, to get out of the issues and be able to give your child your view on life. So it's maybe taking them for a drive and going to get pie or whatever that is, or ice cream or whatever you want to do, but to be able to say, I want you to hear what I'm going after. I want you and your brother, I want you to learn to protect each other, because there's going to come a time where there's going to be people who are unkind to both of you, and you love him so much. I want you to get into that habit to where you guys aren't badgering each other, but instead standing with each other and affirming each other and loving each other, because there will be a time where you'll be all you got. And so I say, this is how this family, I want this family to live in kindness, because the other will harm us. So here's how I think we can do that. Do you want to stand with me? And that's, I don't know how to do it, but I would love for you at least to know what I'm getting at. Even when I discipline you, you'll know this is my goal. I'm not just doing something from a parent manual. So that's a huge, huge, huge gift to give age appropriately and periodically to your children. Get them out of the situation and get to give this beautiful picture of your hope for them, your dreams for them, the gifts that you've seen start to develop in them. And then I would say the next one is an honest faith. We write about it in here. There is a trite kind of victory, super spiritual kind of faith that we can present to our kids, because we're afraid if we don't, they will mess up. And so we give them this larger-than-life sense, we wrote about a couple of them, this is a huge opportunity for a parent to trust what God is doing and avoid trite, manipulative, super spiritual-sounding answers. For example, and then your father saw the error of his ways, and that is the day he stopped smoking. And he gave all that money he was spending on cigarettes to an orphanage in Bogota. And God has blessed him financially for it, and that's how your mom and dad have come to have a nice boat. This is why you should obey your mother and father in everything they say or do. Or this one. In high school, even though everyone else was going out on weekends and doing wrong, I did not. Oh, I obeyed God and my parents, so I stayed home and read the Bible. Often in those evenings, I wrote letters to shut-ins, and I ironed my own clothes. I can't remember a time when I disobeyed my parents, except maybe when I kept writing letters to the shut-ins after I was supposed to turn out the lights for bed. The trouble with the super spiritual life is that your kids fail. And when they see that, and they watch that you never failed, where do they get to go with their failure? They just have to hide. Oh, what a gift to have a parent who says, I've had some beautiful, beautiful successes, and I've matured in many ways, but I want you to know these things that I have failed at and am still failing at. In fact, they are very similar sometimes with the things that you fail at. And if you'd give me the permission to stand with you and you with me, that'd be a great gift. Honest faith. They will trust you. You think that if you tell them that they won't trust you as much, it's exactly the opposite. Exactly the opposite. They will say, how far and can I jump in for you? How much? Give me the next set. Vulnerability. And that means that the parent isn't always right. And that means that you don't get to win because you are the parent. It means when it dawns on you that, yes, maybe they did something wrong, but in the way you handled it, you were wrong. That you call them back, or you call that person back and sit down and say, I just blamed you. I just made you pay for what I did. That was all about me. I'm so sorry. I hurt you. I want you to hear my words. I want to ask you, would you be willing to forgive me And would you repeat back to me what I'm saying? Because that was all me, and I don't want you to carry it. Very, very beautiful thing for a parent to be able to say, I'm sorry, that was about me. Guys, by the way, guy came up to me last service, and he said, would you please try to find a place to put this in your message? He said, I sat and sobbed through this message because this is not what I experienced when I was growing up. And he said, would you tell them that it's okay for them to grieve, that this wasn't their experience? In the light. Wow. I was a liar most of my growing up. All of my growing up. I was a chameleon. Whatever it took for that audience to love me, I would present that way. And it just kind of carried on. And I was whatever was expedient for me to do. And that's not okay before marriage, but it's terrible once you get married. If your spouse goes, I don't think you're telling the truth. In fact, I don't think you tell the truth a lot. But your kids, they can smell it. They are so on to you when you lie. What if we said, see, I just lie still because it's expedient. It's a hassle to tell the truth. People want to know things, and it's just a hassle. It's much easier at first to lie. I've told you the story about the Twix bars. What did they come in from Costco? A package of 6 or 8? Anybody remember? I think it's 8. So we got a package of Twix bars. I have a great capacity for volume. I think, I may be wrong, I think I ate all of them. I know, it's sick. But Stacy comes home, she's not interrogating me, she just goes, hey, I see the wrappers for the trick, and I go, shoot! And she says, how many did you have? And I think, what's a normal answer? What would a normal person say? I had 2? 2? No, I had 8! 8! And wouldn't it be so much better if I could just say to her, I had 8 Twix bars. I'm sick. Deal with it. You married me. Where's Snickers? I want Snickers. Wouldn't that be just better? The only thing, the only secrets we should have, the only ones are birthdays. My wife is a conniving, lying scoundrel about birthdays. She's so good. I'm the worst. Why don't I just tell you? Because you're going to find out anyway. Yeah. But she's the best. Guys, if you chose to say, that doesn't mean you have to tell everything to everyone all the time, but that you really do have it in your control to say, let's have a world where we don't lie, where we tell the truth to each other. Your kids will go, I trust you. I trust your words. Last set, I think. Affirmation. Oh, guys. Affirm early, then, and late. Affirmation is such a sacred gift. Such a sacred gift. Affirmation is not overstated, inaccurate flattery. I know, because I've given both. And you always know, because overstated, inaccurate flattery always gives to get something. Affirmation is representing God to that person, and it gives just to give. Like Rondinello. Rondinello, I don't get to tell you this much, because we used to sit as an elder together. You are one of the finest men I know. Your integrity and your faithfulness in hard, hard times that you never anticipated, it just caused me to trust you so much. I still do. When I see you here, I feel strong for Open Door because you are a magnificent man, Ron. Apart from the sigh, the very thought that Ron, you would never know it, he works for the CIA. He will never say it, but who better than him? You would never guess. Guys, affirmation that we do for each other, do you know what it does? It allows us to not brag because someone's already bragging for us. To affirm your kids and say honest, true things. Not everybody's the best player on their baseball team or their softball team. But to tell the truth about who they are and to tell who God has made them, it grows them up. It lets them know who they are. Permission. We say it this way, and maybe you'd say it 20 better ways, but to use the term in age-appropriate ways, how am I affecting you? Now, this could be true with anyone, but to those who are close with me, especially my kids, even at a young age, you can say, hey, how am I doing? How's Dad doing? How am I affecting you? No, I'm not going to even touch that. No way I'm going to answer that. I'm going to pay for that. And then to convince them, no, you won't. I need to know. I love you so much, I don't want to hurt you. Will you tell me, how am I affecting you? Okay, sometimes, for example, you hurt my feelings when we talk about something because you always have to be right, and it feels like, and there's other times where I feel like you're not listening to Mom at all. And there's other times when you get tired or exasperated, you just shut me out. All right, let's just stop at 3. You know, that's good. That gift of permission. If I get to influence because of my integrity through trust, my gosh, can you imagine how much I will get to influence that child? And the last is identity. To bathe them in identity truth, morning, noon, at night. Even after they have failed and done the worst imaginable thing, to be able to say, nothing has changed with us. I know who you are. You're Christ in you. You're a brand new creature. You're without condemnation. You are beautiful and sacred, and God made you for this time, and he has an unbelievable destiny prepared for you. I don't know what it is exactly yet, but I will stand with you all the way through it. You are beloved. You are adored. You're a child of God. You have all the inheritance of a kingdom, and one day you will stand in his presence forever, and I'll be right there with you. And to bathe them continually when they go to bed at night, where they are sure that just because they struggle with depression or loneliness or that they were left out or that bullies hurt them, that they know who they are because you keep telling them. They will trust you to influence them. I think that's all, huh, John? Now, here's the one that I want to say to you because it's so beautiful to give hope. I'm 63. I'm going to be 64. Becky and I are going to be 64 next week. On the same day, on the same year we were born. Isn't that crazy? And you were April 9th over there. No, I'm sorry. I'm just making stuff up now. So my big deal is objectivity. My big struggle. I've hurt so many people. My family would all say, yes, yes, you've hurt us. Yes, we have learned to be careful. We love you. We adore you. But there's times where we don't tell you stuff. And that would be true about me. And I've hurt many in this church. I've hurt young leaders. I've hurt established leaders. I hurt anyone because I get subjectified when I get hurt or embarrassed or hurt or afraid. And what I want you to know is this is real. And Christ does live in me. And I'm maturing. I'm longing to mature, longing to grow up, because I still want to influence. I don't want to be done. I don't want to be that guy who lost his influence because he chose to not grow up. I'm learning. And God has been pleased to let me not whack out so much. And now I'm going around to people that I have hurt, and I'm saying, hey, you want to come out and play? It's happening, you guys. This is real. Jesus is real, and he's alive. And I hope you write down and say, no, this one you didn't hit on enough, or this one I didn't understand, or why can't we talk about that one? So we'll talk about it here in the living room. You guys, you're going to have an incredible life now, letting people love you and trust you so you can influence. That's the ride that we're on.